We want to thank the Mahlers, Rabbi and Doctor.
Thank you very much. For Doctor and Rabbi, which one? It's Doctor and Rabbi. Doctor and Rabbi. Let's be honest, right? It's Doctor and Rabbi. To be opening your home constantly for the shul. And it's honestly an honor to work with both of you as partners in developing the shul Hakdol HaTorah LaHadira. We've had a fantastic, fantastic weekend, which is not surprising when you have Rabbi Shai Schefter as your guest, as your scholar in residence. So we heard a beautiful shir Friday night, and we heard a inspiring drasha this morning, a wonderful shir on Gilas Esther and Subash Lishit. And to wrap up the wonderful Shabbos with Rabbi Shai, we've asked him to talk about being the son of Rav Herschel Schefter, of one of the poskim of our generation, certainly the posek that our community, that I turn to on a regular basis for guidance. I want to make a very important statement. I don't think our community, and I mean the modern Orthodox Jewish community in America today, would have been able to handle COVID without the guidance of Rav Herschel Schefter. His Piskei Halacha guided us daily, daily. We're talking about this at lunch. Literally guided us daily. The Rabbanim throughout the country turned to him constantly. And he was there and made a very interesting comment this afternoon. You said your father was asked. So, or you asked him. I don't remember. Somebody asked him. You asked him, Daddy, how were you able to give these answers? I mean, what kind of preparation? I said, what do you mean? It was 80 years of preparation. As a posek, to be able to answer, it was 80 years of preparing. And Rav Herschel just did that beautifully. And we listened, which is the beauty of this experience, was that our community listened to Das Torah. We had a psak. He told us to close. We closed. There was no debate. And this went across the country. All of my colleagues, Rav Herschel said, and that was it. Whatever he said. And right through, we had constantly questions about how to remember that first Pesach. How did we get through that first Pesach? Only because we had a posek of the stature of Rav Herschel Schefter. And he guided us on everything, every question. He was there for all of us through difficult, difficult, difficult times. So we have a tremendous hakaras hatov. So how is it to be his son? That is our question for Rabbi Shai. You know his biography, so I'm not going to repeat his biography, but I thank you dearly, and more important, I thank your family for allowing your wife and your kids, for allowing you to spend the time here on the West Coast this Shabbos. Without any further ado, Rabbi Shai.
Shavua Tov, and thank you, everybody. It's been such a wonderful weekend. And I thank the Mahlers for opening their home. I thank the Muskins for really great conversation, great company, great food, great everything, great desserts, more than the food. And I'm not going to fit into any of my clothing when I get home. But it's really been a very, very special weekend, spending time with everyone and being inspired by the community and being able to learn together. I love to teach Torah. It's the greatest privilege of my life. And we struggle to do it as best as we can. Never have I been asked to talk solely about my father. This is a very big challenge for me. Not because I have nothing to say, but because I have too much to say. And I have a flight this evening. So I thank you for making me very uncomfortable. Because I think there's so much to learn from the amazingly inspiring life that my father lives every moment and every day. And I don't know that everybody has the opportunity to have a window into that kind of life. You know, the Pasuk says, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Va'atal Yisrael ma Hashem Elokecha sho'el me'imach, ki im li'yirosa. Moshe Rabbeinu says, what does God actually want from you? All he wants is that you should fear him. Have a little bit of Yirah Shamayim. Ask the Gemara, V'chi Yirah Shamayim milsa zutrasahi. Do you think that Yirah Shamayim is so simple? Moshe Rabbeinu is making a backhanded comment. Yeah, just have Yirah Shamayim. What's the big deal? That's all God wants. Nothing more. And the answer that the Gemara says is, In. Legabe Moshe, Milsa Zutrasahi. Yeah, for Moshe Rabbeinu, it's very simple to have Yerushalayim. No big deal. He has a clarity of vision, a clarity of purpose, a clarity of mission. Everything he does is for Yerushalayim. So yeah, for him, it's not so complicated. It's pretty easy. Very nice answer of the Gemara, but it's a little bit inadequate because the Torah Tumimah, I believe, asked the question, was Moshe Rabbeinu that detached from the reality of where the community was holding? Moshe Rabbeinu, yes, for you, Yiras Shamayim is easy, but for the rest of us, it's not. So did Moshe Rabbeinu really say to the Jewish people, yeah, just have Yiras Shamayim, big deal? The Torah Tumimah says it must mean something else. And he suggests that the Gemara does not mean what we thought. The Gemara means to say, in, legabe Moshe, if you're living around the community, if you're living in the close confines of Moshe Rabbeinu, milsa zutrasahi, it's easy to have Yiras Shamayim because you see somebody who's living this kind of life. And when you have that paradigm in your life, some things just become much simpler. You don't have certain questions. Certain things are very, very easy. And although you asked me to share my experience about my father this evening, I think I would venture to say not everybody in the room grew up in the home of a gadol. I don't know. But it's a unique experience. But I think in many ways it shouldn't be so unique, because we all have the opportunity in our own lives to identify that personality who's going to be the Moshe in our lives, who we look to and who we say to ourselves, you know, if we're in the proximity of this person, milsa zutrasahi, then being an Orthodox Jew and feeling the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not as difficult as it might be for others. So I was blessed to have that in my own home growing up. But I think it's a gift that all of us can give ourselves, to choose an individual in our lives. It doesn't have to be someone who's related to us, but to choose someone who we feel will be able to make those choices and those decisions just a little bit easier. Somebody who we can turn to, who we really trust and who really understands. There's a very beautiful mashal of the Dubna Maggid, where he writes about a simpleton who was once in his community. He was regarded as the person who knew everything. And how so? He really didn't. But everyone in the community was illiterate, and he was the only one who knew how to read. So he didn't really know much. He was completely uneducated. But when somebody walked into shul and wanted to know, do we say Avarachamim the Shabbos? He opened up the luach. He was the only one who knew how to read it. And he's paskin the shilat. They asked him, do we say Tzidkas Chatzedek Mincha Shabbos afternoon? He looked it up and he got the answer. When is Rosh Chodesh? Wow, what a Talmud Chacham. He knows when Rosh Chodesh is. Amazing. They would ask him all these questions. He was blown away. People were blown away by him. What an amazing Talmud Chacham. Incredible, this person. On one occasion, he goes to another village and he walks into one of the local shuls. He has the Daven Mincha. And he sees that there's a group of people sitting around the table learning. Someone's giving a shiur. And he can't follow anything. He doesn't even understand what they're talking about. And he turns to them and he says, what are you studying? They said, we're studying Gemara. Studying Gemara, what's that? Never heard of it. This is advanced Talmud. This is not for me. He goes into the next room and he says, maybe I'll understand what's going on there. He sees a whole group of people sitting around. Someone's giving a shiur. And he can't follow anything. He says, what are you learning here? They said, we're learning Chumash. And he says to himself, all this time, I had an illusion of how great I was because the members of my community were less than I am. And I never really had the self-reflection. I never had the honesty to turn back and look in the mirror and ask myself, who am I? My whole image is based on what people think I am, what they presume I am. But now that I see myself in the context of other people who really are great and who really have a much deeper understanding and greater intellect than I have, I realize what a mistake it is. And the Dubna Maggid explains, Yeshaya HaNavi has an amazing vision where HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows him to see how the Malachim are operating their orbit. And Yeshaya HaNavi turns around after that experience and he says, Oy li ki nidmesi. Explains the Dubna Maggid, we live life assuming that we're all that and we're all this and we're so celebrated. And then we come in contact with greatness and we realize, I'm just me. There are really great people out there in the world. And Yeshaya HaNavi says, my whole life, my community celebrated me as being an amazing Navi. And now that I see real greatness, I realize, oy li ki nidmesi, my whole life is one big dream, it's one big fog. Everything was incorrect, my whole perspective was off. I often feel that when I stand in the presence of my father. As Rabbi Muskin mentioned, I'm involved in a very large community. And as a rabbi, you stand up in front of the tzibur. It's uncomfortable for me to stand up in front of the tzibur. And we hope that someday we'll be worthy of the positions that we have. And at some point in time, you start to think, hey, this is working. You know, I'm educating. It's working. And you start to have a mistaken impression of what godless really is, of what true greatness really is. And then you come in contact with real greatness. And you realize how small you are. And you realize how really great people live life, and how every moment of their lives are calculated, and how careful they are with the decisions that they make, and how they do everything. My father very often quotes that one of the Talmidim of Rav Moshe Feinstein pointed out that Rav Moshe Feinstein was a perfect equilibrium of everything in his life. His ben adam lachavero, his ben adam lamakom, everything was just perfect. But Moshe was so calculated and so careful and so thoughtful and mindful about everyone and everything that he did. And he mentioned that the Torah says that one of the blemishes that would disqualify an animal from being sacrificed in the Beis HaMikdash was a sarua. Sarua means when you have one arm that's protruding further out than the other, or one leg that's protruding out in a disproportionate fashion. And he said about Rav Moshe that sarua by a human being is also a blemish. If a person just highlights too much their ben adam lachavero at the expense of ben adam lamakom, that's a blemish, that's sarua. If a person gets too excited about certain things or is not excited at all, in either direction, extremes are never healthy. A person always needs to strike the balance. And that's something that I'm always amazed by when I watch my father, how he is so balanced. Never loses his cool about anything. Never. And sarua, he always tells us, is a tremendous mum. It's a problem. When a person gets too out of focus in one direction or the other, regardless of which direction it is, it's never a healthy thing. So I feel blessed to have schus avos. I feel blessed that I grew up in a home where certain things were a given to all of us. But my father never gave us privileges for the fact that we are his children. Never. To the contrary. He actually, when we were kids, growing up in school, at least myself, I don't know about my siblings, but I had no idea who my father was. I thought he was the same as my second grade Rebbe. We would come home, we would say, my father would ask us, what did Rebbe say? We would tell him, oh, Rebbe's right. He would always just encourage us, you should respect your Rebbe. He never let off. He never gave us any inkling of the fact that he was 1,000 times greater than any of the Rabbeim that we ever had. He considered himself an equal to all of them in our eyes. And to us, I don't think we really appreciated until we got older who my father actually is. And it's a special tribute to him and to his wanting us to grow and develop on our own. And I'm reminded of the pasuk that we just said this evening. I see your shul says v'yitem lecha, as shuls are supposed to, most do not. But your shul does the right thing and says v'yitem lecha. And in v'yitem lecha we say, yigia kapecha ki tochel ashrecha v'tov lach. The Medrash says, what does it mean, yigia kapecha ki tochel? The Medrash says it means that the greatest value that we can give ourselves in our own lives is yigia kapecha, that we should work hard, that we should develop ourselves and become the people who we want to become and not rely on the schus avos. Schus avos is amazing. I once read in a book that they say in the name of one of the Chassidish Rebbes that he was going through all of his yichus, and he was saying, my grandfather was this, my great-grandfather was the other, and someone turned to him and said, yichus is a whole bunch of zeros. Until you put a one in front of it, you remain a bunch of zeros. It's very nice, you have this yichus and that, but it's not meaningful, it doesn't matter. To make your own life meaningful, it has to be yigia kapecha ki tochel. I remember I was learning in Eretz Yisrael at a certain point, and I wanted to leave the yeshiva and go somewhere else. But it was in the middle of his month, it was in the middle of a year, and they really weren't taking interviews for this yeshiva, but I really wanted to go. And I, at one point, called my father. I said, look, they won't give me an interview, but can you do me a favor? Can you put a call into the Rosh Hashiva? He's a Talmud of yours. Can you tell him that it's your son who's trying to get an interview? My father said, why would I call him? He didn't even understand. So I said, well, I've been trying, and nobody's answering, nobody's responding. So my father said, if you deserve to get in, then they'll interview you, and you'll get in. And if not, you don't belong there. What does it matter that you're my son? And that's the way it always was and continues to be. No privileges for being my father's child, but he always made us work hard to make ourselves worthy of being something on our own. And I feel that that was a tremendous gift that he gave to us. And he commented that Rav Soloveitchik said on the Mishnah, He'emidu talmidim harbe, that it doesn't say you should teach many students. It says, he'emidu, you should allow many students to stand. The greatest value in a teacher is the one who allows his students to stand. Leha'amid, to allow them to stand on their own 2 feet and to allow them to accomplish on their own. So, as children, my father often would tell us a vart from the Gemara. The Gemara says that a melech has a job, he has a mission. And there are many different things that he has to do as king, but one of the obligations that he has is tzarech sheyichtov lo sefer Torah. He has to write a sefer Torah. V'karu bo kol yimei chayiv. It's meant to instruct every decision that he makes throughout the duration of his life. So the Gemara says, what happens if he's a ben melech? What happens if he's the child of a king? And his father already commissioned the writing of a sefer Torah. And now his father left it over for him. Does he then have to go and write his own? So the Gemara says, yes. Afal pi shehinichu lo aviv sefer Torah, tzarech sheyichtov mishelo. Even if his father was a king and wrote a sefer Torah, he has to make sure to write his own when he takes on the mantle of leadership. And my father often told us this Gemara, and what he meant to say was that even if one's parent gave them over a tremendously rich legacy, and all of us have parents and ancestors that gave us over all these minhagim and all these wonderful stories and memories, tzarech sheyichtov lo mishelo, it's your job throughout life to write your own Sefer Torah, to take all of that, incorporate it into the life that you live, but make your experience of life meaningful, personally, make it individual, make it something that is your own Sefer Torah. You have to work hard to whittle that out. And that is something that my father really, all the time, was extremely encouraging of all of us to do, to be ambitious, and to work hard, and to accomplish on our own. My grandfather was a phenomenal personality, my father's father, and it always amazed us. He was a great Talmud Chacham. He was a Rav of a shul for many years, and he was a Rosh Hashiva in YU for many, many years as well. He was the Masader Gittin for the RCA for decades, and he took such pride in his son, and he used to talk to us as children and say, you have no idea what it means that you have a walking Sefer Torah in your life. He would talk to us about it, and he would say, like, almost, he was uncomfortable that his son so much outshined him. And he used to say the same vart at every simcha that he spoke at in the family. He would tell us the same thing. He said that by my father's bar mitzvah, my grandparents didn't have any money at all, so they couldn't really make a bar mitzvah. So what did they do? He was the rabbi of the shul. They made a kiddush after davening with some kichel and herring, whatever it was, and that's what it was. Everyone came to wish mazel tov. So he mentioned that on the occasion of my father's bar mitzvah, that's what they did after davening, and the local conservative rabbi from a few blocks away is walking home from shul after davening in the conservative shul, and he notices a commotion outside of the Orthodox shul. So he asked them, what's happening here? They said, Rabbi Melech Schechter is making a bar mitzvah for his son Herschel. So he said, oh, I have a nice relationship with Rabbi Melech Schechter. Let me go in and wish him a mazel tov. So he comes inside, goes over to my grandfather. He says, mazel tov on the bar mitzvah. And he says, I'd like to give you a bracha. He gives my grandfather a bracha and he says, right now, they told me when I was walking home from shul that Rabbi Melech Schechter is making a bar mitzvah for his son, Herschel. He said, I hope the day will come when you'll be known as Rabbi Herschel's father. And he will no longer be known as Rav Melech's son. My grandfather used to tell us that story all the time. And then he said how in his later years, my grandfather taught in YU until he was into his 90s. And he was he walked very slowly and he would cross the street. And he was nervous to cross the street alone, so he would wait for one of the younger boys in YU to be there to cross with him. So one day somebody comes over to him and he says, would you like some help? He says, yes. Can you help me cross the street? So this young boy turns to my grandfather and says, "Who are you? What's your name?" He says, "My name is Melech Shechter." He says, "Oh, are you Yami's grandfather?" So my grandfather said at the Simcha, he said, "I was proud to see that the conservative rabbi's bracha was not only mekuyam, that they forgot about me with all my positions and everything I did, but I was proud to see they forgot about my son also." And he gave us all a bracha. You should outshine your parents. It's the greatest nachas a parent can ever have when their children are able to accomplish on their own and make meaningful contributions. That was what my grandfather always, always told us. And he used to try to inspire us to do that as best as we can. We give our children a bracha. Many people have the minhag to say it every Friday night. Yisimcha Elokim ke'efrayim v'chimenashe. And many of the commentaries have tried to figure out what is so unique, what is so special about Ephraim and Manasseh. There have been many great leaders, many great individuals that we would want our children to aspire to be like. Why Ephraim and Manasseh? What's so unique about them? Many different ideas, but one interpretation that I once saw is Ephraim and Manasseh grew up in Egypt. They did not grow up in the home of Yaakov Avinu. They were the children of Yosef. They were the Bnei Hashvatim. And what happens ultimately? They worked hard in their own lives to become Kiruvein v'Shimon Yuli. In the end, Yaakov Avinu says, "These kids are so amazing. They are on par with the Shvatim, with the Shiftei Kah who grew up in my house." That's where they've come. That's how far they've come. They grew up with nothing. They were in Egypt, detached from the rest of the Jewish society of the time. And yet they rose, they elevated themselves through their hard work, through their determination to become like Reuven and Shimon, like the Shvatim themselves. And that perhaps is the blessing we give all of our children. That you grow up in a home, and you're a child and a product of a system. And we hope that someday you'll be on par or greater than your own parents. And this is a theme that my father always encouraged us to focus on. As much as you get from the house, and as much as things that you see, he always encouraged us to make sure that we try to whittle out and fashion our own way, and to try to accomplish, you know, our own meaningful contributions. And that's something that I always felt was very, very powerful from the chinuch that my father continues to give us. He often says over from Reb Soloveitchik that it says that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote a Sefer Torah and there was some leftover ink, a diyosh and a shtar b'kulmos, there was some that was left over. And he says a very interesting idea from Reb Soloveitchik, what the significance of that was, but he reminds himself of the halacha that the Gemara describes, that when a sofer writes a Sefer Torah, he has to write the letters, but it all has to be mukaf gvil. There has to be parchment all around the letters. You can't have one letter touching the next. They all have to be separate. And the significance of that, Reb Soloveitchik said, was that so much more than the letters themselves is the open space around them. You can never fully encapsulate a person as much as you study by them. My father often tells us that you can have Einstein is a great genius, but all of his students who are also geniuses cannot be Einstein. They're never going to be him. My father often says it about Reb Soloveitchik, that he feels he was so privileged to have the opportunity to learn by Reb Soloveitchik and to gain so much from him, but he says, unfortunately, none of the students were able to actually take over and be him. So one student got Reb Soloveitchik's ability to be an orator, and one of them got the ability to explain certain things in the way that he did, and each one took some piece of a personality. But I feel the same way when I think about my father, that as much as people know him and as much as they see and engage with him, it is impossible to really understand the person, to really, really have an insight into who they are. So the Gemara tells us in Moed Katan that Im Rabcha Doma LaMalach Hashem Tzavakos Yivakesh Torah MiPihu. When choosing a leader, when choosing somebody who we want to aspire to be like, we should choose someone who's like a Malach Hashem Tzavakos. If he's not like a Malach, stay away from that person. So that's a very lofty aspiration. That's a very big goal for all of us. And many have tried to figure out what exactly does that mean. So there was an elderly Jew who was a Holocaust survivor. His name was Mr. Cooperman, a really amazing person, a big tzaddik who lived in Queens. And he was very close with my father. And when he passed away, I went to his levaya. Our families were close for many, many years. And it was a little strange because we came to the levaya, and basically one of the maspidim got up and was being maspid my father instead of Mr. Cooperman. And he basically got up and he said, "Mr. Cooperman was so close to the Reb Shechter, so I'm going to tell you about Reb Shechter." Interesting. So we were all very uncomfortable. We're sitting there. My father was sitting there. It was just very strange. But something that he said was amazing to me. He said over an insight from Mr. Cooperman. He said he once asked Mr. Cooperman, why did you choose Rav Schechter to be your Rebbe? You're 30 years older than him. You've seen great people in Europe before the war. What is it with Rav Schechter? Why did you choose him? And he said, Mr. Cooperman told him, the Gemara says you have to choose a Rebbe who's like a Malach Hashem Tzivakos. But how do we know what a Malach is like? We don't really interact with Malachim. So he said, Mr. Cooperman told him, he looked in the Navi, where the Navi describes what the life of a Malach is like. And the Navi says the following, that a Malach has shesh knafayim, a Malach has six wings, ubishtayim yo'ofev, but he only flies with two. Mr. Cooperman said, that's what it means, you have to have a Rebbe who knows Kala Tarakula, who has six wings, who can fly, who can soar, who knows everything there is to know. But when he comes down to teach the students, he only flies with two. He's not there to impress them. He's not trying to show off his brilliance. He's there to talk at the level that the students can handle. He has to have a much greater ability, a much more vast array of knowledge in order to teach effectively. But when you're interacting with others, you have to interact on their level. And he said, that is really what made him choose my father. Because he said, I felt anytime I asked him a question about a different topic that had nothing to do with the subject matter that we were learning, he always knew the answer. But yet, when we were learning a subject matter itself, he taught it at our level. And that to me is also an amazing comment. For anyone who's ever interacted with my father, you know his humility is very difficult to describe. I don't know if you've seen it. If you haven't, pay attention next time he's here. Rabbi Muskin told me he's coming in a month or so. It's remarkable. One of the boys in YU sent me a picture a couple of years ago of my father holding a leash with a dog at the end of the leash.
Your mother told me that story.
This guy sends me the picture and he says, Shai, I don't know what's going on, but I just thought you'd appreciate this picture. So I was so confused. I called my father that night. I said, what is this? What is this picture? And in his humility, he didn't even see what was strange about it. I said, Daddy, you're the Rosh Hashiva. What is this? So he says, well, I have three siblings that live in Israel. One of them had ordered some kind of, I think, a new stationery or something. She needed office stationery for her business. And she ordered it to my parents' home. But the problem is that when you have such a big package, if somebody's not home to accept the package, they keep it in the post office. You got to go pick it up. So my father went one day on his way to YU to pick up the package. And he didn't realize how heavy it was going to be. So he's walking out of the post office with this huge box on his shoulder, and somebody passes by and says, Rav Schechter, that looks very heavy. Can I help you? My father says, actually, it is pretty heavy. I would love some help. So the guy says, okay, problem is I'm in the middle of walking my dog, so how about you walk the dog, I'll take the box, and we'll make our way. My father said, fine. So they're walking through the streets of the Heights. This guy is holding the box. My father's walking the dog. And they get to YU, and you would think they did the handoff there. No. They get to YU, and the guy says, where do you want it? My father said, I guess in my office. What floor is it on? Fourth floor, fifth floor, something. So he says, hold on a minute. You wait out here with the dog. I'll go up with the box. So the guy goes upstairs with the box. My father's standing outside. Didn't even think it was strange at all. He's standing out there with the dog. Just such humility. I asked my father, Daddy, how do you do such a thing? He says, what was I supposed to do? What else should I have done? Somebody asked me to watch the dog, so I watched the dog. Somebody asked me to help them, so I'll help him. He didn't even see what was unusual, what was strange for someone in his position. I was actually mentioning to Rabbi Muskin on Shabbos that my father doesn't even realize that it's not always appreciated when he goes away for Shabbos, and he travels often, and he doesn't realize that not every rabbi appreciates it when Rav Schechter shows up to their Gemara Shir. It's not always a great gift to the rabbi. So, in his humility, he doesn't even see what's strange. The rabbi prepared a shir. It says it on the schedule that the rabbi is giving a shir. Why shouldn't I show up if everyone else is supposed to come? So I'm going to come as well. Every time he goes away for Shabbos, if it says on the schedule the rabbi is giving a dafyomi shir, he's giving a this thing, a parsha before davening, my father will be sitting there in the front row like everybody else, won't open his mouth, won't ask a question. As ridiculous a shir as it might be, sometimes, not the rabbi here, but sometimes, there is such a concept that once in a while a rabbi doesn't prepare the greatest shir. My father will just sit there like everybody else in such humility. And I've seen this so many times. Not only that, my father is so careful. He refers to everybody with their title. never calls them by first name. Never. Never, ever. And I'm talking about rabbis who are 30 years old. My father's 80. He's turning 81. I'm talking about rabbis who are 30 years old, straight out of smicha, 28, going to a shul somewhere. My father will tell me, you know, I got a call from Rabbi so-and-so. I said, do you know who he is? Yeah, of course I know who he is. He was at my shir last year. He said, you call him Rabbi so-and-so. He calls, gives everybody so much kavod. It's just unbelievable. He doesn't even think twice. Every time we would talk about, I remember I was speaking to him about YU stuff. And he would say, he would always call, at the time when I was in YU, the president was Richard Joel. He would always say, Mr. Joel called me. I'm like, you're allowed to call, he wants you to call him by his first name. If you don't know him, he's a big teddy bear, such a loving person, a wonderful guy. I said, he wants, no, he's the president. Yeah, got to give respect. You call him Mr. This is the, every time a doctor, he refers to them, doctor, he'd never say the first name. And it just always made such an impression on me that he just shows so much kavod and so much respect for everyone, regardless of age and regardless of who they are and regardless of what position he's in relation to their position. It's just he really goes out of his way. My father's hasmada is phenomenal. I learned with him for 9 years. We had a little debate at the table today how smart my father actually is. It's a good question. I don't know. Somebody asked, does he have a photographic memory? He does not have a photographic memory. But Rabbi Muskin said, I've asked your father Shilas before, and he recalls what he read when he was 13 years old, and you know he knows where the answer is from a book that he hasn't seen in 50 years, 60 years, something like that. I'll tell you this. The way I think of it is, you ever go to Home Depot? Anybody here? Do they have Home Depot here? I assume, right? So you ever go to Home Depot, you walk in, I don't know about you, I walk in there, I'm overwhelmed before I even look for anything. All I need is one screw. I don't even know where to start looking for it. I need a screwdriver. I need to buy a hammer. I don't even know where to start. I walk over to the person in Home Depot who I see first, whoever it might be, wearing the red jacket, say, can you help me? I just need a light bulb. I need a screwdriver. I need a hammer. Immediately, without a moment's notice, without knowing in advance what I'm asking, they tell you, yeah, aisle B64, all the way down on the right side, three shelves down. And I always wonder, do they hire the most brilliant people to work in Home Depot? You walk into Costco, and you ask where an item can be found, and immediately, without looking on their phones, they know right away where it is. And I've always wondered that. How can it be? How can it be that every person that comes to apply for a job in one of these superstores knows exactly where every single item is? Are they all so brilliant? Hard for me to imagine. Hard for me to imagine. And the answer is, because they know that their job depends on it. If you work in Home Depot and you can't answer that question, you're out of a job. So there's no two ways about it. You're more intelligent, less intelligent, better memory, worse memory. If you can't do that, you're out. This is what you need to do. And that's the way my father sees every word of Torah that he learns. If you can't remember the Torah that you learn, you're out. Every word of Torah that he learns is important. Everything. And he files it away. Everything. I don't think he's a genius. I don't think he has a photographic memory. I know certainly he doesn't have a photographic memory, but I do know how deeply he cares about every word of Torah that he has ever learned or heard from anybody else. And it's almost as if his life depends on it. This is kihu chayechem. This is his entire life. This is everything he does. We learned together Bechavrusa for 9 years. Hard to say Bechavrusa. I sat there. He learned. I listened. And for 9 years, we learned together for most of the day. There were times when my father would have to go out for a meeting. Sometimes the meeting was 2.5 hours long, and somebody came to get him for an emergency meeting. We would leave off in the middle of a line of tosis. He would walk in I was in the 2 hours. I was doing my own thing, whatever, not paying attention at all. 2.5 hours later, he would walk back in, literally pick up in the middle of the line where we left off, like nothing happened. And he would say, I would be like, 1 minute, I just gotta, you know, catch where we're up to. He's like, what were you doing? What do you mean you need to catch up? Where have you been? I was busy at a meeting. What were you busy with? And it's not Musar at all. If you know my father, he's such a gentle person, doesn't give Musar, but just so... How can you not be following? This is what we do. This is how it is. When we first got married, so I lived in Washington Heights, and I would learn with my father a couple of nights a week when he wasn't giving shiurim in other communities, we would learn in the afternoons. So Seder officially ended 6:30. And we would learn night Seder as well, some of the nights that he wasn't going to other communities. So my wife would usually wait outside the Beis Medrash for me at 6:30 to go home for dinner. There were times, 6:30, the entire Beis Medrash cleared out. Nobody there. He's totally laser focused. We're in the middle of something. He did not notice that the entire Beis Medrash left. There was not a soul in there other than the two of us. 6:30, 7 o'clock, I'm going out of my mind. 7:30, everyone's back for night Seder, 8 o'clock. Beis Medrash fills up, and we're still going. I was not focused for the last hour and a half at all. I just wanted to leave. But I didn't have the gumption to say that. And there were times when we would sit there for hours beyond the time when Seder ended. And then I would say to him, you know, Daddy, it's getting a little late. He's like, oh, what time is it? I would tell him, you know, it's 8 o'clock. It's 8:30. Like, oh, we should probably go home for dinner. Like, yeah, maybe. And it was just such a focus, such a laser focus, because this is the most important thing to him. And to me, it was so inspiring to watch that all the time. Every Yom Tov, my father learns the Masechta of that Yom Tov, the entire Masechta. So we have nine children in the family. We're children like everybody else's children. When we were little, we ran around like everyone else's kids run around. And my father, every Yom Tov, finished the entire Masechta of that Yom Tov. So Pesachim is not short. It's 120 blot. Every Pesach, he finished not only Pesachim, Chagiga also, because he said, you bring a carbon Chagiga on Yom Tov, so we got to learn Chagiga. And, you know, he wouldn't force us to learn with him. He would just sit at the table after the Seder was over. Everyone always asked, what was Seder like in your parents' house? I said, I'll tell you exactly. We were always so ashamed. You come back to school the day after Pesach, and they always ask, no, what time did he end the Seder, the Rebbe? I don't know if they do that question here, but well, the time he finished, this was like 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning. That one, I'm always like, Chatzos. My father has always got to finish all 4 cups of wine by Chatzos. This is what it is. Says in Shulchan Aruch, that's what we're doing. And that's what we did every year. My father always told us, you all prepared the Torah in school. It's wonderful. You know what we're going to do? We're going to share all of it tomorrow by the meal. We always shared all of our Divrei Torah by the meal on Pesach day, by lunch. And at night, he would really talk to us like children at the Seder. He would talk to all of us on our level, tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. He's like, I don't want your gematrias, I don't want your this and your that, your cute little vertlach. They're wonderful, but we're going to share them tomorrow. And we always finish by Chatzos. Chatzos came, we all went to sleep. My father sat there and learned by the table after the Seder, just going through the Gemara, going through. He said, tonight we bring the Karban Pesach, so I got to learn about the Karban Pesach. Every single Yom Tov. You know how long Yuma is? First of all, how much time do we have on Yom Kippur? Not that much time. But in advance, he makes sure to go through the whole Yuma. And on Rosh Hashanah, he finishes the whole Rosh Hashanah. So I say to myself, is it a wonder that he knows all of these Masechtas by heart? If I would do everything once a year, I would also know everything by heart, but I don't. Because I don't use my time as wisely. And I remember as a child, my father just, again, not in a Musser way at all, but he would see us going out somewhere, anywhere, to the supermarket, to a store, to a game, to anything, to be with our friends. And he would just wonder, like, how can he go without a sefer? Like, what are you going to do if there's a long line? What, you know, really not condescending at all, just wondering, what does a person do if they have a couple of free minutes and you have nothing to do? Like, it didn't dawn upon him that he would, I don't think I've ever seen my father anywhere ever without a sefer. We have a picture in every single one of my siblings' weddings. Every single wedding. The photographer, unprompted, has snapped a picture of my father at some point, either leading up to the wedding, when everyone's getting dressed, doing their makeup, something. The photographer was already there. We have a picture from every single wedding of my father sitting off in a corner somewhere. No attention, no one's looking at him, no one knew. Just sitting there by himself, learning. When you need me, you call me. He didn't make an announcement, he didn't say anything. But this is what he does. This is his entire life. This is every moment, this is how he spends it. And it's no wonder that when it came to COVID, as Rabbi Muskin mentioned, I, together with a group of 4 of my friends, would be on a Zoom with my father probably a few nights a week. It was till 1 or 2 in the morning. We were on these Zooms. We were going through hundreds and hundreds of emails that were coming in every single day from chief rabbis all over the world, from rabbanim of communities, from doctors, Jewish and non-Jewish doctors, everywhere. And we would go through it. We would present the ones, we would distill it, basically, and present it to my father. And then we would ask him to write a tshuva. There was not a single issue that we brought up. And you've seen some of the issues. These aren't things that we deal with on a daily basis. These are things that we deal with every 200 years, maybe. And every single one, there was not a single question that we gave him that he did not have a completely formulated response the minute we asked it. 100% formulated. Not like, oh, I got to check this up, I have to think about it, I have to look it up. The entire idea of a response was formulated the minute we asked him. Then it was just a question of, how do we write it? What are people going to appreciate, you know, if I write it this way, I write it that way? So that was a little deliberation, and the group was involved in that. But he had a completely formulated response for everything, and we finally asked him, you know, like Rabbi Muskin mentioned, how can this be? When did you prepare this? And he said, I've been preparing for the last 80 years. If your entire life is learning Torah and understanding Torah and having a clarity in everything you learn, then when things come up, you're not fazed by it. It's just, he saw all of the Corona questions as another day in the office. He was not fazed one bit. People had a question, I gave an answer. Same way they would call me about a Shaila and Kriyas HaTorah, they call me about this. It was so clear to him. It did not faze him one iota. I'm talking about questions regarding sharing ventilators. Everybody heard about when that came up? So in New York, there was a big discussion about sharing ventilators when things were really intense, really serious. And that's a major question. Sharing a ventilator can potentially kill one patient at the expense of the other. And that was a major shaila. He was totally confident. He had no issue at all telling us exactly what the mahalach was, what the answer was, what the response should be. And we just sat there in awe. And all of us are actually very close talmidim of my father, this small group of us who were working on this. I don't know if you know any of them. Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz has been here, I know. He's one of my closest friends, so he was involved. Rabbi Daniel Stein, he's a rabbi in Manhattan, a Rosh Hashiva in NYU. Rabbi Daniel Feldman, also a Rosh Hashiva in NYU. There were a couple of us who were involved, and we were sitting there in awe. After all the years that we've known my father and learned from him, seeing this was just something that was completely extraordinary. It was something that really showed us what it means to be a gadol, how to think differently. My father doesn't think about himself at all. It's always the tovas haklal. Whatever it is, it's fine. Whatever it is for the tzibur, I vividly recall, I hope to never forget this because it's such an amazing story. It's so awful, but it's such an amazing story. There was a yeshiva in Brooklyn that one of the members of the board had called my father and said, you know, I know that you're familiar with a certain generous person. He holds very highly from you. He feels very close to you. Would you be able to call him and ask him for a donation for our yeshiva? My father's asked to do something. He doesn't ask questions. He doesn't make a cheshbon. He doesn't care. Who's it going to affect? And is this one going to lose money? It doesn't matter. Someone asks me to do him a favor, I'm going to call. So he gives my father the phone number, and my father then calls him back and says, you know, thinking maybe before I call to ask him to give a donation, maybe it would make sense if I first came to visit the yeshiva, and then when I called him, I'd be able to say that I saw the wonderful yeshiva, I met the boys, and maybe he should help out. My father, I thought that was a very generous offer of his. So my father told him, your yeshiva's in Brooklyn. I give a shiur in Brooklyn every Monday night. Next week, I'll tell the guy who drives me to pick me up a half hour early. I'll stop into the yeshiva in the middle of the night seder. I'll check out what's going on. I'll talk to the boys. And then next week, I'll make the phone call. This man was overwhelmed. I can't believe it. Rav Shechter, you're going to go out of your way, come to the yeshiva? He's like, of course I will. So the next day, my father gets a phone call from the Rosh Yeshiva. And he says, Rav Shechter, it's so generous of you. It's so nice that you offered to go out of your way to come visit the yeshiva to make the phone call. I'm thinking about it. You know, I really think it's probably not good for my Talmidim to be exposed to you. So as much as I appreciate it, I think it would be better if you would not come to visit the yeshiva. I'm listening to this. I'm livid. My father did not flinch for one second. And he responded, so I'll call him without visiting the yeshiva. And I said to my father, such a yeshiva doesn't deserve one penny of support. What do you mean you're going to call him? He said, no, he has talmidim who are not talmidim that will learn anything from me. It's not relevant for them to come learn here. So he's probably a fine Rebbe for them. What does it matter that we don't agree with each other? His yeshiva also needs to be supported. He didn't flinch for one second. He told me then the story about Rav Soloveitchik that I'm sure Rabbi Muskin knows Rabbi Julius Berman very, very well. But somebody once walked in to Julie Berman's office. He was actually Rav Soloveitchik's lawyer. He was a lawyer, very successful lawyer on his own, but he took upon himself to help out Rav Soloveitchik whenever there were issues that needed a lawyer, legal counsel. So somebody once walked into Julie Berman's office. I have 5 minutes left. That's what it is.
Go back.
Huh? Keep going. I only got through like one side. So anyone who wants to leave can walk out. So he walks into Julie Berman's office. This was a member of the Eidah Charedis in Yerushalayim. Comes in with a $1,000 check signed by Rav Soloveitchik. And he turns to Julie Berman and he says, "Look, I went to Rav Soloveitchik. He gave me a $1,000 check. What are you going to give?" So Julie Berman obviously was not in the same socioeconomic status as Rav Soloveitchik. If he gave $1,000, the expectation is that a businessman is going to have to give a lot more. So Julie Berman's looking at this and he's wondering, what? Rav Soloveitchik really gave it? It doesn't make sense. He says, "Give me a minute." He goes into the other room and he calls the Rav and he asks him, "You really wrote out this check, $1,000? He says, "Yeah, I met with him yesterday. I was very compelled by whatever he was talking to me about. I gave him a $1,000 check." So Julie Berman said, "Do you know who you gave this to?" He says, "Yes." He says, "He's a member of the Eidah Charedis. This is the very community that puts up Pashkevilim attacking you and saying that you're an apikoros. You gave him money? How'd you give him $1,000? And the Rav said, "Very good question. I asked him that, and he assured me that that's from a different fund." So my father told me this story. I remember I was so incensed when this happened. I was so upset, but I realized I couldn't talk to my father because he didn't even understand what he was upset about. What's the big deal? So I called Rav Asher Weiss that afternoon. I said, "I got to talk to someone about it." I said, "You're not going to believe what just happened." I actually called my mother first. I said, "Don't you let Daddy make this phone call. Don't you dare." That was the end of it. So I called up Rav Asher Weiss. I was so agitated about the story, and I told him, I said, "You're not going to believe what happened." I told him the whole thing. And I said, "Look, you know, my father's right, my mother's right." I said, "They're both right, you know. My mother's right for sticking up for his covet as she should. My father's right, he's so humble, he doesn't even see the problem." He said, "No, you're wrong. Your mother's right, and your father's righteous. That's the answer." He said, "Your mother's right, and your father's righteous." And I heard that story from the Rav. My father told it over to me many, many times. But it really is what his whole life is about. It's not about himself. He never takes himself into account and is a completely selfless person who really gives of his time to others under all circumstances. I always joke with my father that, you know, he's not a rich man, but the Yerusha that he leaves over for us is a lot of Mishugayim that come to talk to him have now migrated to his children and found us. And I'm completely amazed how my father, over the last couple of summers, has been traveling. He goes for like a week or two to Europe on one of these tours. He has zero interest in these trips whatsoever. My mother enjoys it. Says, "If you like it, we'll go." And they go every summer. And while he's away, he's inaccessible. And that's often when some of the people who often take a lot of his time need someone else to turn to. So very often, I've gotten my father's phone calls in the summer. And I'm amazed how many people call to tell me about their revelations, about how they are Mashiach and they need to reveal themselves in such an emergency. And I usually talk to your father about this. I give my whole dissertation to him. And he sits and he listens, but I can't get in touch with him. What do I do? I've spoken to my siblings. My brother also had the same thing, that somebody called him. Also, he can't get in touch with my father. It's just, you know, it's urgent. I need to reveal myself. I'm the Mashiach. And I watch how my father just sits there and listens to all these people like he has nothing else to do. He just shuts his Gemara. And this is a person who doesn't waste a second of his day. But yet, when it comes that somebody needs his ear, doesn't matter what the person's coming to talk about. It's valuable. It's important. If it will mean something to them, I'll sit and listen to them. And I would like sometimes try to rush up the conversation. We were in the middle of learning. This person's sitting there talking about beyond Narishkeit, really. It makes Narishkeit sound valuable. My father would just sit there. He said, no, you know, needs to talk. Let him talk. It's okay. You know, just sit there like there's nothing else going on in the world. And it's something that amazed me. I remember during COVID, I once asked my father, how do you answer? These are such intense questions coming from ICUs all over the world. I said, how do you not fall apart from this? And he said to me, in the name of the Baal Shem Tov, that the first siman in Shulchan Aruch we're told, Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Samid. And obviously it means we should feel the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives at all times. But he said the Baal Shem Tov writes, Shivisi is Milashon Hishtavus, which means equilibrium and balance. And the Baal Shem Tov writes that what it means is that we should have, in everything that we do, we should always feel a sense of calm. Because Hashem Lenegdi Samid. Because I feel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here, so there's nothing to get worked up about. It's nothing to worry about. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always here. And that's what he told me. What should I get worked up about? The Ribono Shel Olam is here. And he lives it. And he really believes it. So the Gemara tells us that we have a mitzvah, V'halachta V'drachav. It's a big theme of Rav Soloveitchik. My father often says it over. But Rav Soloveitchik commented that there are two different Gemaras that teach us the very same lesson. One Gemara says, we have to follow in the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mahu Racham V'chanun, Afata Racham V'chanun. Just like he is caring and compassionate and concerned and mindful of people, so too we should be the same. The other Gemara says, from a different Pasuk, Mahu Malbish Arumim, Mahu Menachem Avelim, just like God actively engages in burying the dead and visiting the sick and taking care of hands-on needs, so too we should do the same. Rav Soloveitchik asked, why do we need to learn the same lesson from two different Pesukim? It's the same idea. And Rav Soloveitchik said that there are two expectations that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has of all of us. One is, you ever seen a person, I don't know if there are any doctors in the room, there's definitely one doctor, I don't know if there are any others, so sometimes a doctor who's dealing with the most critical issues, you told me last night that you don't deal with such critical issues, most of the things are routine, but sometimes you have a doctor who works in a very critical care unit, and at some point after 20 years, 15 years in the field, they almost become callous. They almost have to be. What, are you going to break down every time somebody comes in for an open heart surgery? It is what it is. I got to do my job. And the heart is not there. They're doing the job with great expertise and with great finesse, but there's something missing in the feeling that they have toward that patient. And sometimes it's in the opposite direction. You have a person who's very compassionate and very caring and very understanding, and they read an article in the newspaper about some terrible thing that's going on in the neighborhood, and they say, oh, it's so terrible, but what can I do? I'm not a doctor, I'm not a nurse, I'm not in anything, what am I supposed to do? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects both of those from us. The Ribono Shel Olam says, I expect of you to have a hands-on intervention in every possible scenario that you can contribute in a meaningful way. Mahu malbish arumim. It's not enough to sit back and say, oh, I feel so sorry, I'm so sad, it's terrible. Do something. Get up and do something. Be malbish arumim, be menachem aveilim. But on the other hand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu talks to the member of Hatzelah and to the member of the Chevra Kadisha and to the doctor and to the nurse and everybody else and all of us and says, you're involved and you want to be on the Chesed Committee and you want to help other people. It's wonderful. But don't ever forget that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also the Racham L'chanan. And there's such caring and compassion. I cannot even count how many times a week I'm on the phone with my father. I shouldn't say, that's a little bit of an exaggeration. It's not how many times a week. It's how many times a month that I'm on the phone with my father about critical medical issues. Very critical medical issues. End-of-life issues, abortion questions. These are questions that come up every single day from Rabbanim all across the country. My father doesn't have a cell phone. I do. And many of the Rabbanim have called me. They know that I, Baruch Hashem, speak to my father very regularly, and we discuss these questions all the time. And every time, my father gets so emotional when dealing with the question. And I always wonder, this is not your first rodeo. You've been dealing with this for 60 years, almost. And every time, Rabbi Mahler just reminded me that I said in a different venue, during COVID, there was a doctor who I'm very friendly with who runs the pediatric ICU in Cornell. And we actually became very friendly from Camp Simcha. She was in Camp Simcha with me one summer. She was a doctor there. And we developed a relationship. And during COVID, she called me once that she had a non-Jewish patient who the family had requested that she pull the plug at some point whenever it was appropriate. And she said, I'm an Orthodox Jew. I've never had to do that because anytime I've been asked by a patient to pull a plug, I can always send in an associate and have someone else do it. It's not, doesn't require major expertise. But she said, during COVID, every staff member that I pull away from doing something else is potentially pikuach nefesh. They need to be busy with the other patients. I can't just leisurely call in another doctor or another nurse and say, you know, this is what the patient wants, you know, just make sure it's taken care of. I can't afford to do that. And she called me with a major question. What do I do? The family wants me to do this. I'm going to have to. I said, look, it's way beyond anything I can handle. So we called my father. She's never spoken to him before. And we're on the phone. She's presenting the shiloh. And it's quiet. And she starts saying, hello, hello. She thought the line went dead. So I text her offline. I said, my father actually cares about what you said. He's crying by the situation that you just presented to him. And it was so shocking. It was so shocking. Here's a doctor who you've never met talking about a non-Jewish patient who you'll never know, a family who you have nothing to do with, calling you with just an ordinary question. And you cry over the sensitivity to the person that's in question. And that's a tremendous testament to a person who's really in touch with people's feelings, who really understands and who really knows how to sympathize. I really think that I can go on forever. I should close probably. One story, we do need to go to the airport. But my father has told me many times that he gives away more than 50% of all of his earnings every year to tzedakah. And I always ask him, how can it be? You know, there are lines of people that come to collect money from him. And they all think that he has some rabbi's discretionary fund. He doesn't. He's not a rabbi of a shul. Nobody ever gave him money to give away. He gives personal checks to every single person that shows up. He never turns anyone away unless he feels that there's a reason not to give them. But if he feels it's an appropriate cause, he always gives them. And I once asked him, how much money do you give away every year? It's going to be nothing left for us. He says, no, I give away more than 50% every year. He's like, yeah, Shulchan Aruch says you should really give 10%. But, you know, sometimes when there's a need, you got to give more. So what can you do? And that's him. He just has such compassion and such caring. And it's amazing. You know, my father has been attacked in the newspapers many, many, many times. Mercilessly attacked. He's a big teddy bear. And when you read, if you know him only from these attacks in the newspapers, you would think he's a big monster. And there were many times that he was attacked, and I knew exactly what had happened from behind the scenes. I saw the whole trajectory of the story from beginning to end, and I saw how dishonest it was, and it eats us up as children. It's very painful. Just as a takeaway, be careful what you post online, not about Rabbanim, but about anyone. Just think about the impact that it has, and think about how painful it could be to the collateral damage. Even if you feel that what you're saying is honest and important to share, think about the other people that are impacted. And my father never stopped learning for a second. There were attacks, I'll call them out, in the Jewish week all the time. They were out to get my father all the time. And I would see these things and go crazy. I couldn't function. My father didn't waste one second. He said, they decided to get me? I'm not going to read it. It's not going to bother me. It's going to stop me from doing what a good Jew is supposed to do. Didn't faze him for one second. There's a story that was printed in the Mishpacha magazine a couple of years ago. It became a famous story. It happens to be it was like almost entirely accurate, the way the story was written. But the most amazing part of the story they left out. The most amazing part of the story they left out. So the story was that my father was in Eretz Yisrael one summer. And he had left his attaché case in the taxi from the airport to where he was staying. My father's entire life is in his attaché case, literally everything. His Rolodex, his phone numbers, his everything, all his papers, everything he needs is in there. So if you ever want to get him, just take his attaché case. So he left it in the taxi. About a day or two later, someone in the family got a phone call, I think it was my brother, that this taxi driver has the attaché case, he wants to bring it, he heard it's my father's, he wants to bring it back. So they made up when they were going to meet. So he comes to meet, my father actually paid him. He said, like, you know, this is so, you went so out of your way, but how'd you find me? So the man says that He's looking through the Rolodex to try to find somebody who would know whose bag this is. And he's calling this one, that one, the other one. And finally, they pieced it together and they said, "Do you understand whose bag you have? This is Rav Schechter's bag." He said, "I never heard of him. This is a Chiloni in Israel. And I never heard of my father." So they start explaining to him who he is. And he was all excited. So he says, "Listen, he told my father that he's been struggling with infertility for many years. Him and his wife have not had children. And he said to my father, 'I don't want your money. I just want a bracha that I should have a child.'" So my father became very emotional from that. And he asked the guy for his name and for his wife's name. And he writes it down and he says, "I'm going to daven for you." Okay, that was the end of the story. A long time later, we were in Baltimore for Simchas Torah. My brother lived in Baltimore and we all went as a family. A guy comes in. It was actually Rabbi Rafi Butler's son. Had just come back from Israel. He showed up in the shul where we were. I don't even remember his first name, one of his older children. And he comes over to one of us and he says, like, "I'm uncomfortable. Somebody gave me a message to give your father, but I'm just not so comfortable." So we said, what's the issue? He says, "I hailed down a taxi in Yerushalayim to drive me to the airport. Taxi driver says, 'Where are you going?' He says, 'I'm going to New York.'" "Oh, Shamata al Rav Schechter?" He says, "Yeah, actually, our families do know each other." So he says, "Oh, Tagila Rav Schechter, she nolad ben lanahag shalom." So the guy was so uncomfortable. You know, what's he like? He's going to come back and tell him the taxi driver had a baby. Like, it's so strange. So he didn't even know the guy's name. He didn't know anything. So he tells one of us. So we go to my father and we told him. We understood right away what it was. And we told my father, "By the way, this young man just came over to us and told us that that taxi driver, the one who came back, had a baby. He wanted to let you know." So my father was very overwhelmed. We went back home to eat. And at the meal, we asked my father, "You know, what do you think?" And he's like, "Yeah, very nice. I'm so happy to hear." And I said to him, "You didn't really daven for him. I mean, you met the guy once." And my father looked at all of us straight in the eye and he said, "I've been davening for him 3 times a day since the day I met him." And to me, that was the greatest part of the whole story, and they left it out. That's what matters. That somebody came to you with a need, who you've never met before, who you will never meet again, and you care enough that since the day that you met him, you've been davening for him and his wife 3 times a day. That's what amazed me. That's what it means to care. That's what it means to be a great person. You know, we know that as Jews, we are nimshel elavana. We actually follow a lunar calendar, not a solar calendar. And Rav Asher Weiss told me when I took the position in the Young Israel of Woodmere, we spoke at the time, and he said, "Just remember, the Jewish people are Nimshel Levana." And what does that mean? Probably means many things, but he said, I'll tell you what it means. Lo chashuv kama ata gadol, ela kama ata gadel. Doesn't matter in life how big you are. What matters is how much you're willing to grow. And what I feel every time that I interact with my father is it's not about how great a person is, it's about how much they're willing to invest in their own growth. So my father does every single day. He's never satisfied with what he's done, what he's accomplished, what he may have accomplished, what he would have accomplished. It's always, how much more can I grow? What more can I accomplish? What more can I do? How can I help someone? And that is the life of a great person. Someone who does not worry, who does not pay attention to kama ata gadol, to how big you are, but rather kama ata gadil. We may not all be gadolim. Maybe someone here will be. But that's not what's important. What's important is to take away how much we're willing to push ourselves, how determined we are to make ourselves grow, to allow ourselves to grow. And that, I think, is a very big takeaway from a very, very special life that I'm privileged to have interaction with every single day. But as we started, I think all of us have the opportunity in our own lives to make that kind of conscious effort to identify those kinds of people in our lives who really do represent greatness and who are able to make all of us feel that we too should aspire for greatness at the same time. So Shavua Tov to all of you. It's been a pleasure spending a Shabbos. Really wonderful weekend. And